Dr. Ron Carr.
All right, thank you, and I'd like to thank the CHC section for inviting me, and also like to thank my home institution, Texas Chiropractic College in Houston, Texas, for sponsoring me for coming to this conference as well. So, benign joint hypermobility syndrome, a public health clinical brief. I'd like to acknowledge my co-author, Lindsay Andrews, as well. I currently have no financial relationships to disclose for this presentation. So, background. This is Hippocrates here. And the first known reference to joint laxity, which leads to hypermobility, is attributed to Hippocrates. In the 4th century B.C., he described the synths as being so loose-limbed that they were unable to draw a bowstring or hurl a javelin. When we look at benign joint hypermobility syndrome, or hypermobility in general, currently the prevalence of the general population varies anywhere from 10 to 30%. There's actually an increased incident in females of about 5.5 times greater risk of hypermobility, joint hypermobility. And when we look at ethnicity, Asians actually have a greater prevalence rate than African Americans. African Americans have a greater prevalence rate than Caucasians for hypermobility. Right limb, children from families with higher socioeconomic status, connective tissue disorders, Marfan's, EDS, osteogenesis imperfecta, for example, all manifest as excessive joint flexibility and pain. The term hypermobility syndrome was first used by Kirk, Ansel, and Bywater in 1967 to describe the disorder in which musculoskeletal pain and generalized joint hypermobility occurred together. Healthcare professionals often demonstrate limited understanding of symptoms associated with benign joint hypermobility syndrome and its importance as a pathological entity. The Department of Health and Human Services, when you look at Healthy People 2020, lists musculoskeletal disorders among the most common causes of disability in the United States. And a condition that comes up constantly is acroparesthesia. And El Shadi and El Sharif actually did a study looking at the increase of prevalence rate of benign joint hypermobility syndrome and its prevalence in individuals with acroparesthesia, predominantly nerve compression disorders. So again, the diagnosis of this is predominantly based on its clinical grounds. So what I wanted to do was, for the purpose of the study, was address this clinical brief and provide a narrative overview of this condition and review the Brighton criteria and the Beaton score, and also essentially as a call to action for practitioners that engage in manual medicine. And so the secondary purpose is to increase awareness, understanding, and clinical screening procedures among providers. So what I did was I did a database search of PubMed's and all Medline, what we did, and we used some key terms in there for this disorder. And we went up to December 2012, retrospectively, did a search, and what it yielded was, essentially, we had 77 reports, which included history, presentation, diagnosis, treatment, and prognosis. And from those 77 reports, I teased out looking at specifically evaluation and the diagnostic criteria for hypermobility syndrome. And I weeded that down to about 22 articles. And from those 22 articles, what I synthesized was this criteria that was constantly coming up on the diagnosis of benign joint hypermobility syndrome. And what a lot of these 22 articles constantly iterated was that to diagnose this disorder, they used this Brighton criteria. Now, this Brighton criteria comes with two components, essentially a major and a minor. Now, the Brighton criteria, by definition, to diagnose a patient with benign joint hypermobility syndrome, you can have two of these major components. You can have one of the major, two of the minor, or you can have four of the minor in order to diagnose a patient with benign joint hypermobility syndrome. And part of that major and minor criteria, they look at something called the Beaton score. Now, the Beaton score is a series of tests that you will do with your patient. And that series of tests is putting your patient in a variety of different positions to assess joint laxity. And you would get a score of 9, essentially, for these 5 procedures, scoring 2 points for each of these, and 1 point for the patient being able to flex forward with their hands flat on the floor and knees extended, 1 point for apposition of the thumb to the flexor aspect of the forearm, 1 point for hyperextension of the knee beyond 90 degrees, 1 point for hyperextension of the elbow beyond 90 degrees, and 1 point for passive dorsiflexion of the metacarpal joint to 90 degrees. So again, we're taking these, and you can have a score of 4 or more, which then will clinically diagnose you with benign joint hypermobility syndrome. So what does that mean? The primary clinical manifestation of hypermobility and pain in multiple joints must raise a red flag for early screening procedures, especially those that are engaged in manual medicine procedures. Physicians who use manipulative techniques must recognize that joint hypermobility syndrome can be contraindicated to the HBLA and joint manipulation. There's been some evidence that shows overzealous physicians that engage in manipulation can create such damage as dislocation of the intervertebral peripheral joints, inflicting rupture on ligaments, joint capsules, muscle, tendons, and pathological fractures as well. So again, the incidence of this can be misdiagnosed or underdiagnosed, and physicians should be aware of this clinical presentation to increase their diagnostic acumen and improve clinical outcomes for their patients with musculoskeletal pain. In conclusion, I think if early recognition is initiated by manual medicine practitioners, it will increase it will decrease the incident rate of injury to our patients. Better screening mechanisms, as chiropractic physicians and manual therapists, should recognize the contraindications to their intervention, their primary intervention. And again, the fact that addressing Healthy People 2020 and those goals related to musculoskeletal disorders, I think as chiros or as individuals in manual medicine, we should properly identify those conditions. Now, what I've done with this study, essentially, or this analysis was, at our institution, for all of our Tri-1 students that enter into the college, I put them through a pre-participation physical exam. A pre-participation physical exam based off of the work of Funk and Candido, that based out of the University of Bridgeport, they've initiated this pre-participation screening for students entering into manual medicine schools. And what I've done at our institution, what every first try student has to have a mandatory physical exam within the first month of their enrolling into our institution. And we implement this screening process for all of our students. And interesting enough, we capture about 5% of our students actually have benign joint hypermobility syndrome. And that's significant because if they automatically enroll in a manual medicine class, an adjusting course, within their first year, students are test dummies. They practice on each other. And if we don't capture some of these risk factors early, we can create a lot more injuries to our students, increase the incident rate of maybe they're not even practicing. So I think this lays down some foundation, but also engages that manual medicine practitioner to screen, and more screen. And that essentially was the general theme of this morning's session, was screening. So thank you for your time.